May it please the court. And thank you for inviting me here in the middle of Mardi Gras.
Did you catch some bees?
Yes, as a matter of fact, yesterday after dinner, there was a parade between myself and the hotel, and it took me about an hour and a half to get back there.
Good. They would call that lanyap for your trip here to Oregon. So you may press ahead on behalf of your client.
Thank you, Your Honor. The first issue I'd like to take up is the one of disproportionate sentencing. Before I go into it too deeply, I want to say that I was not the trial counsel on this case, and I don't believe that either the government or the defense gave this case the attention it deserved. And I think that makes the job before this court, and it certainly made my job, more difficult, because the record is not as coherent as it should be.
We don't see many perfect trials.
No, but I see a lot that are better than this one. Now, the first question, I think, is whether the sentencing objection was preserved. The defense counsel objected to procedural error and substantive error, but did not object specifically to the failure of the court to consider 3553A6 or specifically to the disproportionate sentencing. On the one hand, the disproportion of 100% between Mr. Hernandez and Mr. Cardenas-Meneses was pretty glaring. And so it could be argued that the court should have realized that that was what was being objected to. However, it is not a compelling conclusion, and so I'm going to take this up under plain error review. However, I don't think it's necessarily plain error. Again, the record from both sides was not as clear as I would have liked to have seen. First, it was error. For plain error review, there has to be error. Under 100% disproportion, plain error exists in failing to consider A6. It was a factor that was strongly involved. And under Smith and Brantley, a factor that is strongly involved has to be considered. This is not something where it was a minor discrepancy. This was a glaring discrepancy.
Let me ask you a question. Maybe I should know the answer of it at this point, but were these two defendants tried together?
No, they were not.
Okay, so the Hernandez one-day trial guilty plea was well before your client's how many days trial?
I believe it was a three-day trial, but I can't remember off the top of my head how many days the trial lasted. And I think if we look at the Supreme Court case of Gall and look at the discussion in there of A6, where a disproportion exists, this is an important factor. It's not a factor that can just be ignored, as it was herein.
You're talking about the discrepancy between Hernandez's sentence and...
Yes.
Okay. Now, these guys weren't situated the same, but your man, the evidence indicated he was the ringleader.
Well, that's not clear either.
Well, it may not be clear, but the judge was certainly entitled to find that, wasn't he?
Well, not entirely. Out of the people who were charged, I think the word the judge used was that he was at the pinnacle. And I suppose that would leave Mr. Hernandez as the penultimate step up the mountain.
Well, what about the trial judge's reasoning for so determining that? Do you say is not anchored in the evidence and what was before it? I know you disagree with it, but the judge articulated a basis for deeming that this person was at the top, et cetera, et cetera. So do you say that beyond just disagreeing with it, do you say that it's that conclusion is not anchored to anything that was in front of the judge that the judge could fairly consider in the clear breath of, what's there?
There were two people, a Mr. Clito and a Mr. Papo, whose role was never explained at all. These were two people in Mexico who were not indicted. We don't know their real names. These sound like nicknames to me.
The judge isn't required to speculate about somebody who's not there to say that somebody else might have been more culpable. I mean, there's no law on that, is there?
Well, we can determine that Mr. Cardenas Meneses was marginally above Mr. Hernandez. I think the term the government used was a little above Mr. Hernandez.
Did Hernandez testify?
No, he did not, I don't believe. But we cannot conclude, we cannot conclude that Mr. Cardenas Meneses was necessarily the pinnacle because we haven't determined what role these other people play.
All right, so are you responding to my question by saying that the district court was required to figure out all the roles of anybody who might have been involved before it could tag your guy as in the pinnacle? I mean, as the pinnacle. Is that what you're saying?
As a what?
Well, are you saying that I asked you straight on, what is it among the factors that the district court articulated as a basis of finding your client, you know, leader or is at the top, that you disagree with or say is not anchored to anything that's in front of that judge? You didn't respond, you didn't answer my question directly.
You
responded by saying, well, it may be other people that were involved and this record doesn't show who they were and so forth. So I said, well, are you saying that before the judge can go to where he did, he's got to figure out the relative roles of anybody who was or could have been involved in order to do that? So that those are the two questions I ask.
Yes, and I disagree with the word pinnacle because we can't say he's at the pinnacle because we don't know who else is involved or what role they played. And that is left as an open question in the record. And as I said, it was not a stellarly litigated case by either side.
I have a note in my file here that Vera testified that we all work for Joel Cardenas.
Yes, but his "we all" didn't include Cleto and Papo.
Well, I don't know. All is pretty inclusive.
Yes, all of them in his group did.
So as far as he knew, this was the boss.
As far as he knew, but he didn't know everybody. But that's not, I don't see that as a major issue because we concede, we agree with the government. Mr. Cardenas Meneses was a little above Mr. Hernandez. That was their words.
The only thing I'm trying to understand is what exactly, beyond your disagreeing with the sentence, what exactly are you saying that the district judge erred in considering in order to get to where the judge got? You're still not telling me that.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought I had. The sentence was grotesquely disproportional for someone who was a little above his co-defendant. And I believe 3553A6, which forbids unwarranted discrepancies between similarly situated co-defendants, requires some proportionality. When you have someone who is a little above someone else, for them to receive twice the sentence when they are similarly situated.
What do you base your conclusion that he was only a little above Hernandez? What evidence in the record shows that?
That was the government's conclusion, Your Honor.
He was a little above?
Yes, on page 286 of the record. That was what the government stated to the district court.
Well, what about evidence? Is there any evidence that, we've got this woman, we've got Vera's testimony that he was the boss, and I don't remember seeing anything describing him as just a little above Hernandez.
Well, that was the government's words.
Right,
but if you look at the record,
right,
Mr. Hernandez was involved with just about every decision that was to be made by this group. He was entitled to every single upward adjustment under the guidelines that Mr. Cardenas Meneses was. Mr. Cardenas Meneses was primarily in Mexico, and Mr. Hernandez was primarily in the United States. But the division between them was very small. Mr. Hernandez was involved in this probably for at least as long as Mr. Cardenas-Meneses. We have Ms. Mendoza, who was working for Mr. Hernandez before Mr. Hernandez was working for Mr. Cardenas-Meneses or with Mr. Cardenas-Meneses. So the discrepancy between those two, in the government's words, is little.
Mr. Hernandez given, I know he went to trial for one day, but was he given a reduction in his sentencing level by pleading guilty ultimately?
I don't believe so. I think when someone concedes defeat at trial, that is not acceptance of responsibility. I have not seen his PSI report. No, I do not know the answer. The record doesn't reflect it one way or the other. And once again, the record is somewhat hollow. But he was given what would be a guideline sentence for his case, so it does not look as though he got a downward departure.
The judge obviously thought that Cardenas was the boss of this organization, and if the evidence supports that, what's wrong with him getting a larger sentence than, the lieutenant, who may carry out the orders and be deeply involved, but he doesn't make the command decisions?
And if he receives a larger sentence, that's fine. If Mr. Cardenas-Meneses had received a proportionally larger sentence, 3553A6 would have been complied with. But this was not proportionally larger. I don't think even the government contended that Mr. Cardenas-Meneses was twice as culpable as Mr. Hernandez. They said he was a little above. If the sentence was in the range of 240 months, I don't think we'd be here with this argument. But 3553A6 requires proportionality to be considered. It was not even considered. And it was plain error not to discuss 3553A6 in the context of a 100% discrepancy for someone who is a little above a lieutenant who was entitled to all of the same upward departures under the guidelines, all the same enhancements, I should say, under the guidelines. And with that, I will reserve the rest of my time if the court has no further questions.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
You've reserved some rebuttal time. Mr. Berry? Did you handle the matters below?
No, sir, Your Honor, I did not. Richard Berry for the United States. May it please the court, counsel. If I could begin by putting the case in a bit of context to perhaps answer Judge Clement's question. Mr. Hernandez and all of the other co-defendants were tried first because Mr. Cardenas absented himself from the United States and returned to his home outside of Mexico City shortly after the fatal crash on August the 9th, 2004. In fact, he wasn't apprehended until 2011, hence the seven-year gap between the crash and the trial. And he was apprehended not reentering the United States. He was apprehended leaving Mexico for Guatemala to continue his alien smuggling operation. Now, to address the questions that all of you ask opposing counsel, the trial was a five-day jury trial. Judge Crane sat through the entire trial. After he had addressed Cardenas' objections to the PSR, he said, "You need to understand, you, the attorneys, and Mr. Cardenas need to understand, I have the newspaper clipping from this accident in my office. I'm considering a variance, a substantial upward variance." For the remainder of the sentencing hearing, Judge Crane went into substantial detail as to how and why it was his opinion that Cardenas was the pinnacle, the top, the lone individual in charge of the smuggling operation. As Judge Davis said, Mr. Vera testified, that he worked for Jorge Hernandez, and several of the other individuals said that they worked for Jorge Hernandez. But the testimony is crystal clear that any time there was a dispute with Jorge Hernandez about money, working conditions, or any other matter, you went to Joel Cardenas to get that dispute resolved. At one point, Mr. Vera had a dispute with Mr. Hernandez about a $3,000 smuggler's fee, a $3,000 payment to Mr. Vera. Hernandez said, you have to talk to Joel to get that worked out. Vera went to Cardenas. Cardenas peeled off $3,000 in cash and paid Mr. Vera on the spot. There's testimony that Mr. Cardenas, although Tony Arispe, who was in charge of the group responsible for the crash, reported to Hernandez, as did everyone else, occasionally Cardenas would call Tony Arispe directly and ask how business is going. And after the crash, Cardenas insisted on a meeting with Tony Arispe and with the Santos, the driver of the car, and said, Campos, I'm sorry, the driver of the car, and said, you need to continue business as usual. In other words, you guys need to continue making money for me, Joel Cardenas, the head of the operation. As to the statement at sentencing, the prosecutor said Mr. Hernandez, who was a little below Mr. Cardenas, got 15 years. The case law is clear that avoiding unwarranted disparities is geared toward avoiding unwarranted disparities nationwide between similarly situated individuals. This court's cases are equally clear that there's no need to avoid disparities between people who are not similarly situated. As Judge Crane said at sentencing, having sat through the trial, having heard the testimony, having heard part of Jorge Hernandez's trial until he elected to plead guilty, and having seen the PSRs for several of the co-defendants, Judge Crane made it the determination that Cardenas was the head of the operation and that he and he alone should bear the most severe punishment for the death of 9 individuals in the car in the drainage canal. He specifically addressed the terrible loss of 9 lives, which would go to the nature and circumstances of the offense, the history and characteristics of Cardenas, his role as a leader and organizer, because again, as Judge Davis said, Vera testified that he started with Cardenas in the late 90s, and they literally worked up from a 2 or 3 man operation to a smuggling operation that included several dozen individuals at different times. Judge Crane also addressed the tremendous profit that Cardenas made, because after the United States arrested, for reasons that I personally do not understand, Cardenas put on an accountant to testify to the amount of money that Cardenas spent while Cardenas was in Mexico City, which was roughly 9 times the amount that he had reported on his taxes. Judge Crane seized on that and said, not only were you in charge of the smuggling operation, you obviously profited handsomely from the smuggling operation.
Now, who put that evidence on?
Mr. Cardenas. They called an accountant to test. Yes, Your Honor, that was my question. They called an accountant to testify that he had made, if memory serves correctly, that he had reported approximately 140,000 pesos and then proceeded to catalog about 9 times that much in expenditures, including the purchase of 2-3 businesses, a car wash, a brokerage firm, and a third business, which eludes me at this moment.
So to show he was wealthy and didn't need to deal in alien smuggling? Was that the...
Your Honor, I must confess ignorance. I do not know the purpose for calling the accountant. It was a defense witness. Judge Crane also addressed the loss of 9 lives, which would reflect the need for the offense to... the need for the sentence imposed to reflect the seriousness of the offense and the need for the sentence imposed to accord adequate deterrence both to Mr. Cardenas and to those similarly situated. In relation to the overall offense, Judge Crane was crystal clear that Cardenas was at the top of the organization and that he felt completely comfortable in imposing a sentence twice that imposed on Hernandez. Various other defendants got lesser sentences either because they assisted the United States in the prosecution of Mr. Cardenas or because they pled guilty and were held to lesser accountable roles. Mr. Cardenas' sentence was 360 months, is 360 months, twice the sentence imposed on Hernandez. But his guideline sentence, which apparently he does not now contest, was 168 months to 210 months after ruling on all of his objections to the PSR. So it's not twice the upper end of the guideline range. It is perhaps twice the middle of the guideline range. But again, Judge Crane was crystal clear at sentencing that Cardenas alone was in charge of the operation. And
so what was the Hernandez guideline range?
Your Honor, I'm sorry. I do not recall that from this record. Hernandez went to trial substantially before Cardenas because, of course, he was still there and pled guilty after the end of the first day of trial. As Judge Davis said, Vera said, we all work for Cardenas. Hernandez was clearly in charge of day-to-day operations, but if there was ever a dispute, the individual had to go to Cardenas. Cardenas was in contact with not only Tony Arispa, who was in charge of this group of smugglers, but contacted Armando Campos, the actual driver, not long after the wreck and encouraged them to continue in the smuggling operation. So I would respectfully submit that Judge Crane's decision to impose a 360-month sentence was eminently justified by the horrific facts and circumstances of the August 9th, 2004 car crash.
Did he have prior convictions, Cardenas? Were there prior convictions or other relevant conduct in there?
I don't believe that he did, Your Honor. I believe he was a criminal history category one. Okay. I'm all but certain that he didn't have any prior convictions. Court has any other questions about the identification issues or about the sentencing, I'd be delighted to address those.
I think not. Thank you. We have your argument.
Thank you very much.
All right, Mr. Conrad, you have rebuttal.
Yes, thank you, Your Honor. First, the government said that Mr. Cardenas Meneses, who for at least 7 years before his arrest lived in Mexico, had absented himself by living in Mexico. I think that aspersion is unjustified. He stayed home.
When was he indicted?
That I do not know. I do not know
when. Before he absented himself?
No, he was in Mexico when he was indicted. So, and he also speculates as to why he was going to Guatemala. I don't think any of us know why he was going to Guatemala. He was just going to Guatemala.
He stayed in the U.S. before this accident. He lived in the U.S. most of the time, as I understood the record.
No, he'd lived in Mexico for several years before this accident.
He had a place in the U.S. where he was when the accident occurred, as I understand it.
I don't know if he was in the U.S. or in Mexico when the accident occurred, but his primary residence was Mexico. Now, the government says that 3553A6 only requires a lack of unwarranted disparities nationwide. That's not what Beleza says. As a matter of fact, Beleza goes on to consider unwarranted disparities between similarly situated co-defendants in that case. So he is taking one sentence of Beleza out of context and using it as the holding. It is not the holding. And what was done in Beleza was to consider similarly situated co-defendants in that case. The government emphasizes that 9 lives were lost. The same 9 lives were lost in Mr. Hernandez's case. Moreover, the decisions that were the proximate cause of those losses of lives were made by Mr. Hernandez, not by Mr. Cardenas Meneses. Mr. Hernandez was in the same place under the guidelines as Mr. Cardenas Meneses, They were both leader organizers. Mr. Cardenas Meneses was only marginally above Mr. Hernandez. This was not a situation with one person who has all the decision-making authority.
So what you point to in the record of PSR that supports the notion of march, other than you saying that, what?
The government's concession that Mr. Cardenas Meneses is only a little above.
No, the government, you said that. The government hadn't conceded that. The government said that Cardenas was a little below Cardenas. So, I mean, that's just a statement. If that's the best you have for what statement you made, that's not going to get there.
The record does not indicate anything other than two very closely aligned people working very similarly together. It does not indicate a huge discrepancy in the role those two played. And as I said, both of them were leader organizers in this case. We see many cases, including huge numbers of drug conspiracies, where there's one person at the top, but there are a number of leader organizers, and they are usually sentenced pretty closely together.
Well, that's why it's called particularized sentencing. Judge heard 5 days of trial. He had the PSR. There were nine people who died. The judge commented in his 3553 that the illegal alien smuggling continued even after the deaths. I mean, he iterated under 3553. And you disagree with it, but I just still haven't heard you point to something in the record that the judge was required to take into account or otherwise overlook. I hear your argument about you disagree with how that ought to ferret out, but on three different occasions, you haven't pointed to something in the PSR that's erroneous, some evidence that the judge overlooked, or some other objective factor that we would look at to say the judge abused discretion, other than you're arguing the proportionality. So it's the centerpiece of your argument that the sentence was not proportional?
The centerpiece is that the sentence was not proportional and that the trial court grossly erred. Plainly erred in failing to even consider 3553A6, did not so much as give it lip service, and I believe that the case law requires a factor that's strongly implicated to be discussed.
All right, we have your argument. We appreciate the advocacy and briefing argument by both counsel. This case will be submitted for.